please let me know that you can hear me. Okay, fantastic. We are ready to start. This is our first Haggadah Shir in this new series of online Zoom Shiurim. And Yemir Hashem, until we get to Pesach, Mondays will be Haggadah Shel Pesach. So I wanted to share with you in the brief time that we have four ideas, all of which that come from the opening section of the Haggadah. Obviously, the bulk of the time we spent at the Seder and the overwhelming bulk of the Divrei Torah that people share on Pesach at the Seder relates to the Maggid section. And Yemir Hashem will have future Shurim that go through the various sections of Maggid. But actually, for today, I dafka wanted to offer four insights that are all before we get to the Maggid section. So first, some words of introduction. We take for granted that the event, so to speak, that the religious experience, the meal that we have on the evening of Pesach is called the Seder. But you know, we're so familiar with it, I'm not sure how often we consider why it should be called the Seder at all, or what message were Chazal giving us by determining or that this particular momentous evening is called a Seder. So the Maharal of Prague actually suggests something very interesting. He said the events of Yetziat Mitzrayim, leaving Egypt on that fateful night, at first blush, when you look at them as they're described in the Torah or in the Midrashim, are anything but orderly. Seder seems to be the furthest from the truth. How could you describe what happened on that fateful night as Mesudar, as orderly? On the contrary, it seemed to be chaotic, completely, you know, crazy, people dying, Malach HaMoves, people rushing out, they didn't have any time, they're rushing, their food didn't have time to rise, they're slapping on the backpack, grabbing some silver and gold on the way out. Seems very, very chaotic. Moreover, it was in the culmination of all this time of all of the Makos, which seemed to be also tremendous chaos and social upheaval during the actual plagues, and then, of course, culminating in crescendo in that Makas Bechoros, which you can only imagine how chaotic it was, as every family member, every house, as people dying. Says the Maharal, that's why Chazal are so focused not only on calling it a Seder, but we have these various simonim. Kadesh, Orchat, Karpas. Why do we have so much of a focus? Why do we start the evening even by giving these names? All of this, says the Maharal, is to emphasize to us that despite the fact that it seems like these events were chaotic, it seems like these events were just happenstance or just, you know, as I say, completely chaos, in fact, all of it was ordered. All of it was mesudar. All of it was organized and determined on high by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the whole, one of the main themes, says the Maharal, of the Seder, of the Haggadah, is to ingrain in ourselves, and then, of course, even more importantly, into our children, the appreciation of the difference, but the parallel between the natural and the miraculous order. That even though there are things that appear in the natural world as chaotic, upheaval, instantaneous, we couldn't prepare for them, we're shocked by them, it was all Baratzon Hashem. It was all as Mesudar, as if someone had just laid out everything, you know, on a silver platter, very organized. Imagine, you know, a super comprehensive business plan that a startup was using, you know, to get some venture capital seed money or something. You know, everything had to be a very organized, systematic business plan. Everything's organized. We think of that as organized. We would never have thought of the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim as being anything similar to that. And says the Maharal, that's why we call it Seder, to reinforce to us the belief that even though we can't see it, even though it looks chaotic, but in fact it was all Mesudar, it was all Baratzon Hashem, just as much as if things had followed a more easily determined and predictable plan. I have to say that this is one of my favorites. I think I try to start the Seder every year by mentioning this, but the truth is that, given the recent events that we're all living through, it kind of jumps out at me more than almost any other year, considering how so much of our lives have been completely turned upside down. We're at health risk, our financial security, so many things that seem to have come out of nowhere. You know, a month ago we thought we had one future, and now, you know, we're questioning it and we're nervous, and all that's natural and normal. it's totally reasonable, again, in terms of al derech hateva, to think of everything as being chaotic and completely unexpected and out of nowhere. But part of our belief is something this significant, something affecting the entire world, something affecting the entire Jewish world and the entire world. There's no question that we believe that this comes beratzon Hashem. This comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why he's doing it? What exactly is his plan? I wish I knew. And I give myself a bracha and all of us a bracha that we should have the strength, inner strength and otherwise, to get through it. But we have to believe, and this is the Maharal says, this is part of the theme, and I think this year it's a particular avoda for us to focus on our belief and not only emuna, but bitachon and hashkacha, and that these things are really truly coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they really are Seder. That's all underlined by just this idea of calling it the Seder, and the fact that we focus on these simanim as a framework for the evening. Continuing in the theme of an introduction, it is also worth noting something which I think is quite beautiful. On the one hand, the mitzvah of Magid, the mitzvah, the oraisa that we engage in the night of the Seder, is called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. On the other hand, the vehicle that we will use, the primary text that we will use to fulfill the mitzvah of Sipur, is something that we call a Haggadah. L'saper u'lahagid, Sipur and Haggadah. Right? All things being equal, we would think of these things as more or less synonymous. They both mean to communicate something or to tell a story. But we know that there's a basic premise that there are no synonyms in Lashon HaKodesh. There has to be a difference between l'saper and l'hagid, between sipur and haggadah. What's the difference between these two words, which basically combine to make up our Pesach experience on this fateful night? So the Malbim, commenting on Perek Yotef in Sefer Tehillim, Pasuk Bet, where the very famous Pasuk we're all familiar with tells us, Hashamayim misaprim kivod keil, umase yodav magid harakia. The heavens are misaper, they tell the honor of God, umase yodav, and the creations of God, magid harakia. They tell over, they give over their magid, the firmament, the lower heavens. So here in this very Pasuk, we have clearly the theme of the Pasuk is praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and yet the Tanakh, the Sefer Tehillim, Dafka uses these two phrases very deliberately in different halves of the Pasuk. The first half is L'saper, and the second half is Magid. What's the difference between these two terms? So commenting in his Perush to Tehillim, the Malbim says something very profound and very fundamental. He says L'saper recounts things that occurred in the past, whereas Magid or Lahagid describes things that are relevant to the present. How does that apply to this particular Pasuk? So the Malbim plugs it in a very powerful way. He says, Hashamayim misaprim kivod keil. The heavens are misaper, they tell over the glory of God. What does that mean? That we are, the heavens, Hashem's creations, recount the things in the past, the stars, the heavens, the Shamayim, that declares that long ago, in the Sheshes Yimei Habreishis, during the creation story, long, long ago, thousands and thousands of years ago, HaShamayim Misaprim Kivod Keil, the heavens declare that God made an incredible universe. That's declaring with tremendous praise the incredible universe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made all that time ago at the moment of Masa Bereishis. However, the Pasuk continues and says, Umasa Yadav Magid Harakia. Magid, as the Malbim explains, means something that's relevant and present. That is to say, specifically, says the Malbim, Zerakia, which is a term that refers to the lower sky, the lower Shemayim, the one that's more connected, the heavens that we can interact with, not the things that are galaxies and galaxies away. But when you and I look up at the sky, what we're seeing is that lower Rakia, says the Malbim, that's what's being referred to here at the end of the Pasuk. Umasa Yadav, Magid Harakia. This is what's relevant and present in the ongoing functioning of the world, something that's relevant in the present. The lower sky constantly attests to the constant and present and continuous wonders of Hashem. Once upon a time, there was l'saper of the Shemayim, but now in the interaction that we have, the Masa Yadav, the human beings, the human race, the Jewish people, what we interact with in the lower spheres, with the Rakia, that is Magid of the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'saper is something that happened a long time ago. Magid is something that is present. So there was a Rosh Yeshiva from Chicago named Rav Yitzchak Sender, Zichrono Levracha, from Skokie Yeshiva, passed away not that long ago, and he has a series of Haggadahs called the Commentary Seder and the Commentary Haggadah. All of his Sfarim are of a similar title, and in one of the volumes, I think it's volume 4, he suggests, based on this Malbim in Tehillim, that we can explain the dual terms that we use on Pesach night, that we are fulfilling the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim with the Haggadah, with the Magid section. That is to say, we're talking L'Saper, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're talking about events that happened a long time ago, in the time of the actual Exodus of Mitzrayim. However, the mitzvah of this, at the night of the Seder is not only to talk about past events, but to do so in a way and in a manner that comes alive and asserts their relevance and relates to us today. Each and every section, each and every paragraph in the Haggadah, it's not enough, just to understand how they relate to what happened at the time of Mitzrayim. That's Sipur. But Magid, Haggadah, says that we have to not only see what happened in the past, but also see how they have a relevance and relate to us today. So two ideas, just as the introduction to the Seder, why is it called the Seder, and what are the dual themes of both Haggadah and Sipur. Moving on, we'll skip, I have nothing particular to add at the moment on Kadesh, but let's move on to Orchatz. We'll give one idea on Orchatz and then one idea on Karpas. So Orchatz, as we know, is we wash our hands without a bracha. As many times as we have done this every year of our life, as many times we try to remind ourselves and our family members, there's always some people, and I admit there have been times it's been me, that it's just Pavlovian, it's muscle reflex, muscle memory, that water hits your hands, and before you know it, you're at Baruch Atah Hashem. So this is an opportunity once again to remind myself and to remind all of us that first time we wash our hands, it's without a bracha. And so why are we washing our hands? We're obviously not eating any matzah yet. So what's the purpose of washing our hands? So as we probably know, this is because we're about to do karpas when we take a vegetable and we're going to dip it in salt water. And this is relating to a halacha which most of us are not generally familiar with, but it's a halacha that the Shulchan Aruch brings in Simen Kuf Nun Beis, that when you have a vegetable or any food that's going to become wet, davar shetibulo b'mayim, it's going to become dipped in some kind of a liquid, in this case certainly a water, so once it's dipped in water, it becomes susceptible to tumah. If it would then touch something tameh, it would become tameh itself. And therefore, Chazal made a halacha that before you're going to eat a davar shetibulo b'mayim, something that's going to be dipped in water or some other of the appropriate liquids, first you have to wash your hands to make sure that there's no tumah on your hands, so that way even if you touch these vegetables which have been dipped, this way it won't make any vegetables tameh because your hands are washed. That is the idea of davar shetibulo b'mayim, and that's the idea of Orchatz, that is to say that we wash our hands since we're about to dip a vegetable in water. However, even as I'm saying this, I'm sure many of you are thinking, and it's a reasonable question, why in the world do we do that on the night of the Seder when we don't do it at all throughout the year? This, everything I just said in the last minute has nothing to do with Pesach, nothing to do with the Seder, nothing unique at all. So why, why of all times, or all of a sudden now are we washing our hands because we're about to have vegetables that are going to get wet? We have salad, many of us, many times a week. Some people eat salad every day. The vegetables get washed, at least I hope so. They're wet. Since when all of a sudden are we worried about our hands becoming tameh? What's going on? So the truth of the matter is, it's not just a practice. If you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch there, in the Nosei Kelim, the Magen Avram, the Vilna Gaon, they discuss whether any of this really even applies nowadays. And the Mishneh Berurah already in his day, the Mishneh Berurah notes that this is not something that people are generally makpid on. This is not something that people generally practice nowadays. So if that's the case, why all of a sudden, poof, on the night of the Seder, before we're about to dip the karpas in the salt water, out of nowhere, one night, out of 365 nights of the year, all of a sudden are we being worried about washing our hands and the tum on our hands and davar shetibulo b'mayim? What is going on? So if I'm not mistaken, one of, if not the first person to ask this question, is the great Netziv of Elojin. And the Netziv explains in his Agada Imre Shefer that the Seder night is dominated by the theme of Zecher Lemikdash. We're commemorating the things that happened in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, even as we know, the most clear example of this is Korech, when we have the matzah and the Maror together as a sandwich. We say Zecher Lamikdash Kehillel, Kainas Hillel. So there we stated explicitly that Zecher Lamikdash. We're doing something the way they used to do it in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. So the Netziv says, even though we say it uniquely at Korech, but it's not a unique theme to Korech. In fact, the entire theme of the Seder night is dominated by Zecher LeMikdash. And if you take a look, if anyone can get a hold of the Haggadah of the Netziv, it's not that hard to get. A lot of any good farm store nowadays probably will sell it. So this is the main theme of the Netziv, or one of the main themes of the Netziv. In his commentary throughout the entire Haggadah, he explains all the different aspects of the Seder, how they are Zecher LeMikdash. So therefore, even though we don't usually care about our hands being tamei or not, when it comes to vegetables, but since in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Zecher LeMikdash, they used to do it, so too Zecher LeMikdash nowadays, we do it. Ad kan the Netziv. So I saw something that I think is connected to this, but makes it much more beautiful, I think, and meaningful. In one of the collections that they have of Rav Kook, of Rav Yitzchak Cohen Kook, and his commentary to the Haggadah, or at least in one of the collections that they have, so he doesn't quote the Netziv, but as some of you probably know, Rav Kook was one of the Talmidim Muvhakim, one of the prized students of the Netziv, and it's certainly possible that he was aware of this commentary of the Netziv, and he was inspired by it, although I don't believe he quotes it. But Rav Kook explains Al Derech Machshava in a very deep way, similar to the Netziv, but building off of it implicitly. He says, the uniqueness of the Leil HaSeder is that we can transport ourselves into a future where there will be a Karban Pesach. We treat everything at the Seder as if we were in the Beis HaMikdash with a Karban Pesach. Why do we do that more on Pesach night than we do on Sukkot, than we do on Shavuos or any other holiday? So Rav Kook explains so powerfully and so beautifully because that is the power and the magic of freedom, of Chayrus. When a person is free, we can imagine of and dream of a better future. Being free gives us freedom from the bonds and the limits of time and place. A free man, a free woman, a free person can dream, no matter how difficult the things are in the present, a free person can dream of a better tomorrow. We can be transported through our imagination and our dreams to another reality where we dream of that better tomorrow. That's all a gift and a result of freedom. However, slaves cannot dream. Because slaves have no control over their own future. Slaves know that their future is going to be as dreary as it was today, it will be tomorrow. And if the taskmaster, if the Adon decides to change it, then it'll change. But there's no point in dreaming because it's totally, completely out of control of the person, him or herself. So says Rav Kook, on this night where we're celebrating our Chayrus, therefore we daf to do something that is not at all relevant. Ein hachinami, says Rav Kook. Dipping the vegetable, washing our hands, not at all relevant to nowadays. But we're dafka doing it, not just to look back, but our ability to look back and remember our, and appreciate our chayrus energizes us and inspires us to really be in touch with our freedom, which allows us not only to look back as Zecher LeMikdash, but to look forward and to dream of a time where not only we're remembering what was in the Beis HaMikdash, but Emir Tashem one day soon will be when we are able to actually bring a Karban Pesach and be in the base that makes this a shlishi. That, so to speak, messianic dream, says Rav Kook, is a function of the chayrus, which we achieved on the night of the Seder, and that is paramount as part of our religious experience at the Seder to remember and celebrate the birth of our freedom on Pesach night. Last but not least, just a few more minutes, I want to share a final idea on Karpas. That was on Orchaz, even though it connected to Karpas, obviously, but that was on Orchaz. But now I want to share one of my favorite ideas, a beautiful, beautiful idea on Karpas, which you can find in the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks Haggadah, which is a fantastic, fantastic Haggadah, certainly one of the premier English Haggadahs, fantastic ideas, Kedarko B'Kodesh. And right in the beginning of the Haggadah on page 9, Rabbi Sacks notes the following. When we dip at Karpas, the vegetable, into the salt water, that's, of course, only the first of two dippings we'll have at the Seder. As we say in the Manishtana, right, this is Alayla Azeh Shtei Pa'amim. We dip two times. Later in the Seder, we will dip the Maror into Charoses. There are two dippings at the Seder, notes Rabbi Sacks here. We dip the vegetable in the salt water. That's the first dipping, Karpas. But then later we will dip the Maror into the Charoses. Explains Rabbi Sacks that the entire story of Pesach really, in Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Exodus, goes back not just to Moshe, you know, entering the historical scene and the lead up to the actual Yetzias Mitzrayim, but of course the story really begins with Yosef being sent down to Egypt, and that led to our Golos, which eventually necessitated, all those years later, the Geula. What is the precipitating event that brought Yosef down to Egypt? So that was also with dipping, as the brothers dipped Yosef's coat in blood as a symbolic act, that symbolizes the entire beginning of the story, the Maskil Bignus. As the Pasuk says in Bereishis, the Perek Lamed Zayin, V'yikhu es ksones Yosef, v'yishkatu se'ir izim, v'yitbalu es ksones badam. They dipped his coat in the blood. So the whole beginning of the story, the horrible gullus, began with an act of dipping. However, notes Rabbi Sachs, the story ends and it culminates on Yitziat Mitzrayim when we also have an act of dipping. As the Pasuk tells us in Shmos, Perek Yud Bet, when it came time to prepare for the Karban Pesach, V'lakavtem agudas ezav v'tavaltem badam, they took the hyssop and they dipped it in blood, and then they higatem el amashkof, they sprinkled it or they wiped it on their doorpost, and it was because of that, hatem lo teitzu ish mi pesach beso ad boker, that's how they were saved from the Malach HaMavis, that's how they were saved from Makas Bechoros. So the story begins with the dipping of Yosef's coat, and it ends with the dipping of the hyssop in the blood. What do we see from this? Says Rabbi Sachs in his inimitable and brilliant way, says there's an inverse or a parallel but inverse relationship between karpas on the one hand and the dipping of the maror into the charoses on the other hand. Karpas represents dipping something that is, he calls it sweet. I'm not sure that the lettuce or the potato or whatever people use, I know some people even use a banana who are on this chat, some bari pri adama that we dip, it's not necessarily always sweet, it depends what you use, but it's certainly not bitter. Let's call it parvet worst. So he says if you take something sweet, karpas is taking something sweet and dipping it into salt water. That reminds us that freedom, something that is inherently sweet, can become bitter if we mistreat others and we abuse that freedom. And that's the lesson of Yosef's story, of the Yosef story. They were free, they had a family, they had wealth, they had everything, and they blew it with sinas chinam. They took something sweet and they embittered it. They took the karpas and they put it in salt water. However, maror into charoses is the end of the story. Maror is inherently bitter, but we dip it into the charoses, something which is sweet, because slavery can become sweetened when the collective suffering becomes human solidarity. If we go through a difficult time, a time lahavdil like we're having now, and a time like they had in Mitzrayim during the Avdus, but we do it with achdus, we do it with empathy, we do it with chesed for people who are suffering even more than us, so then that type of bonding together, that what he called collective suffering, can become a human, with human solidarity, that transforms something that's inherently bitter, and it gives it a little bit of a silver lining. It's matek, it sweetens a little bit, it takes away the roa of the gzera. By taking the maror and dipping it into something sweet symbolizes taking life's challenges and finding the silver lining, or not just finding the silver lining, but based on how we experience them, we can channel and make a negative into at least a partial positive. And that's part of the lesson of the Pesach story. It's one that would be relevant, and I think a beautiful symmetry that Rabbi Sachs brings our attention to, the karpas versus the maror in the charoses, the two dippings in the story. It's relevant and beautiful every year, but at least for me, and I'm sure for many of you, it stands out with particular meaning and resonance and relevance, giving, you know, on our own level, the challenges that we are going through now. So these are four brief ideas in the opening section of the Haggadah. Emir Tashem, a week from today, we'll meet again. We'll meet before, in between then as well, for other shurim, but for the next Haggadah shir, a week from now, and we'll pick up with Magid and start going through many of the beautiful ideas contained therein. Everyone should have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for participating. Mm-hmm.